League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everyone. Today's Wednesday, January 17th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, here with Kevin, here with Darren. Please listen to us anyway you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a share. You see something that you like that we post, share it. Get it out to everybody out there. We want to hit everybody. So, guys, we had a so-so wild card week. Super wild card weekend that was. We had some good games, some not good games, some cold games, some snowy games. We said goodbye to some high profile teams. Since our last podcast, we said goodbye to Bill Belichick in New England. And we're going to go through that. We're going to go through around the world of sports. We're going to start with an overview of the NFL weekend. Guys, what did you think of the games out there?
Wake me up when it's over.
Yeah.
Boy, they were tough to get through. Darren hit the nail on the head. The only good game was the one that he said was the best of the weekend, the Lions-Rams. Boy, Green Bay put a hurting on Dallas. Tampa, shockingly, just destroyed Philly.
Yep.
Buffalo-Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, at least they fought back a little bit. And Houston, the second half, they just pulled away from Cleveland really easy. And then Chiefs-Dolphins, we had a nice, sub-zero degree game, and Miami couldn't handle the cold.
15 people hospitalized with hypothermia.
The coolest thing about that game is when they took the beer out of the fridge and it froze as they were handing it to somebody. Like, they had to keep it in the fridge to keep it warm.
Wow.
Super wild card weekend, my ass. There was nothing super about this game. There was one super game. The rest of them sucked. Detroit and the Rams, like you said, the rest were one-sided. Now, if you're a Jet fan like myself and you hate the Dolphins, I enjoyed Saturday night tremendously.
Oh,
if
that was
you
fun.
Are a Giant or a Washington Commander fan or an old-school Redskin fan like Gino, you enjoyed the hell out of watching Dallas and Philly lose. But, I mean, the games themselves, okay, Houston destroyed Cleveland in the second half. Flacco throws the two pick sixes back-to-back, and then they get stopped on downs. I mean, they were in it for a half.
Yeah, we'll start right there. So we'll start with this first Saturday game. Houston destroyed Cleveland 45-14. It was 24-14 at the half. Then Houston took over. They shut down Cleveland in the second half. They scored 21 points. It wound up being a rout. Flacco threw two interceptions, which were both returned for scores on consecutive passes in the third quarter. The first for 82 yards, second for 36 yards. C.J. Stroud became the youngest QB to win a playoff game. He threw for 274 and three. Kev, Houston, Cleveland.
I thought the second quarter was a bit of a turning point, too. It's a little early feeling out period, I thought, between both teams. The offense started to get going. Cleveland had back-to-back touchdown drives. They go up 14-10, and they get the lead, and you're thinking, okay, Cleveland's defense is going to figure this out. And the first play, bang, 76 yards, Stroud to Jordan, touchdown, 17-14. I mean, that was just so quick. Never gave Cleveland really a chance to settle in and really, get that defense cranked up. And then after training some punts, they had that drive before the half. They go score the touchdown with a minute 11 left. All of a sudden, they go up by 10 before the half. And like you said, 24-14. And to me, that was the key part where, they got out in front. They had the ball first going into the third quarter, even though they punted. But, you had to feel good as a Houston Texan there to say, we're up 10. We've put together some we had the big play. We put together a nice 2-minute or 4-minute type drive. And we've got the ball coming out. I mean, just give them all sorts of momentum and the confidence to put together a good second half. And then, of course, the back-to-back interception returns just ended the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought the injury to Betonio hurt them a little bit on the up front for Cleveland. When he got banged up, it seemed like they didn't have that same push on the O-line. And I thought the player of the game was Laremy Tunsil. He kind of kept Garrett under control. I really liked what I saw from him. I mean, he was kind of doing a one-on-one most of the game, too. The difference between a good left tackle and a bad left tackle, right? Dalton Schultz had a really nice game. Nico Collins had a nice game. And a guy that doesn't get talked a ton about is Singletary, who runs really hard. They talk about Pacheco running hard, and you hear about Mostert and all these underappreciated backs. Singletary runs really hard. I mean, I think that Houston's offense just seemed to be clicking, and Cleveland did not adjust at all. I mean, the touchdown pass to Jordan, I could have thrown that pass. I mean, he was that wide open. Yeah. I mean, you know, I may not have gotten it all the way. I think I could have come close to throwing that pass. I mean, you know,
I would have been 10 yards short.
One cut and he was gone. I mean, I couldn't believe how easy that was for Houston offensively. And then the back-to-back pick sixes, and it was, oh, you know, Flacco this, and oh, love Flacco, hate Flacco. That's who Joe Flacco is, and it's not to insult him. Joe Flacco's a great drop-back quarterback. If he's given time and the O-line's good, he's going to be just fine. But when he has pressure, you saw he couldn't get away from the sack. You know, he stood there and he got eaten alive a couple of times. And then he threw the picks. And that's that. You know, he got him into the playoffs. You congratulate him for what he did. But when the O-line can't stand up for him, he's not going to be good. He's too old. And he wasn't mobile when he was young. So Houston really probably wouldn't say the most impressive, because Green Bay was probably the most impressive, but I'd say the second most impressive team that I saw this weekend. I'm going to give Green Bay the nod for what they did in Dallas, because Houston was home. But that's the only reason why. G?
Okay.
And,
all right. And
Stroud, 16 for 21, 274, and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's got to be very familiar in about 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Yeah, I know where you're going. All right, Houston with the win. They're the 4 seed. They're going to go to Baltimore. We'll talk a little bit about that matchup in a little bit. Second game Saturday night was the freezing below zero temps in Kansas City. They get the victory 26-7. Mahomes, 262-1. He gets the win. It's an injury-depleted Dolphins team. We've talked about it. It was 16-7 at the half. The score looked a lot closer than the game, though, guys, from what I was looking at. KC held Miami to 76 yards of rushing. Rashee Rice, 8 for 12, 130 yards and 1. Looks like the only steady receiver Mahomes has out there. It looks like since the second half of the season, he's come on a little bit now to give him at least one consistent receiver out there. Darren, why don't you start with Kansas City?
Okay, the Peacock thing is a joke for the playoffs, by the way. I know we said it last week. I got to watch the game. You got to watch the game. You got to watch the game. Yeah. But let's be honest. I mean, welcome to pay-per-view playoffs, because this is what's going to happen going forward. This is the kickoff of it. G, you want to make a point before I get into the game?
30 million people watched the game.
23.
Okay,
23. Maybe it's okay. 30. I think 30 people subscribed and 23 million watched it. But the simple fact of the matter is that this is what we're going to do now. We're going to pay for every game we want to watch now. That's where we're going to go in this league. It's all about money. I just thought that was horrible. Chiefs controlled this game, even though at one point it was 10-7. It was just a one deep pass to Hill where he got to come back on it. He had beaten McDuffie, but McDuffie didn't adjust to the ball in the air as fast as he did, as quick as Hill did. Mahomes played really well in the conditions. His stats look mediocre because Kelce dropped 3 on his own. I mean, let's be honest, including a touchdown. So Kelce dropped a touchdown. Jawan Taylor brought a touchdown back on a guy that wasn't going to make the tackle. And
Taylor got pushed in the back a little bit there too.
He did, but he still had his hands extended. So they're going to call it on him. You're right, Kev.
It's definitely – yeah, you're going to see as a referee, you're going to call that penalty.
I love the fans, and I know I'm a little partial with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have had more touchdowns called back than any other team in the league this year. Let's be honest. I know they get a lot of calls, but they lose a lot too. I thought, again, a couple of great scrambles by Mahomes. And what I saw in that game is that Tua didn't want to be there. And Waddle even short-armed one. They weren't a factor, Waddle and Hill, that much, except for the one big play. You know, running real hard for Pacheco. Even see Clyde Edwards-Helaire ran really hard when he had the ball. And like I said earlier, all season, basically, this is the best defense the Chiefs have had. It could have been a shutout. Too many field goals for the Chiefs. They can't settle for them. But outside of that, and Jawan Taylor sucks. But outside of that, you can't really get mad at the way they played in that kind of weather. They came out slinging. If it wasn't for a couple drops, Mahomes would have had 300 yards, three touchdowns, and a pretty solid game. Kev?
I think you read some of my notes here. Okay. I wrote down about the too many field goals and everything else. But the Chiefs did a great job of keeping Miami on the sidelines. They had five separate drives of nine plays. Mm-hmm. And they had another drive before the half, seven plays for a field goal. That's six good, lengthy drives. If you're out there on the field playing offense, you probably don't feel the cold nearly as much as you do when you're on the sideline trying to bundle up and try to keep warm. What got me was in the fourth quarter. I was furious. I hate the Miami. I wanted to see them lose. I was furious at what Miami was doing. Now, Kansas City, bridging the third and fourth quarter, they put together that seven-minute drive, 14 plays, got the touchdown, go up 26-7. So it's three scores. Miami comes out showing no urgency with, 10 minutes left in the game.
You were texting it to me.
10 plays, 53 yards, and 4 minutes and 44 seconds. You're not supposed to take 30 seconds off the play clock in every play when you're down three scores. And then they get the ball back, and then they go a 12-play drive where Tua goes 3 for 12 on the next drive. there was no fight to Miami, which was just the part that got me. There's no, hey, we're down three scores. Let's get something going. Let's try to do something here. They took their time in that drive, and it was just like that's a terrible indictment on the team.
Kev, I would like one of us to work for one of these NFL teams just as clock management. We are the clock management supervisor for a game. That's it. Because exactly your point, the way some of these teams manage the clock, it's ridiculous. You're down three scores. A little urgency getting to the line. Listen, I know it's below freezing. I get it. But at the same time, it's like, get to the freaking line.
I mean, I'm watching this.
Do you want to win or do you not want to win?
I mean,
indeed, there was one even more egregious clock management game that we'll discuss later. But this was awful. I mean, Miami really showed no fight in this game. It was horrible to watch. Got no carries. They didn't give the ball to a chain much. They really didn't try.
Yeah. And Darren, listen. I stated it when I gave you a little opening. We know it's an injury depleted Dolphin team. I get it. But at the same time, exactly what Kev started with, which is, can these guys show a little urgency? Just a little urgency. I mean, you're down three. You're down three touchdowns at that point. I don't know. The lack of urgency with some of these teams, it gets mind-boggling at some point. It really does.
Well, there was a pass to Waddle where he literally just short-armed it because he thought he was going to get hit. Yeah. Then there was a pass, the last pass to Hill, where he didn't come down with it, and he just didn't seem like he was upset about it, which was surprising to me because he's a competitive guy going up against his old team. I just was surprised at some of the body language I saw on Miami throughout. And I get the whole injury thing. I do, but a lot of teams are banged up at this time of year. Your quarterback. You're missing your two pass rushers. I'm going to grant you that.
Yeah, weren't they also missing a cornerback or something also?
Yeah,
I think they said
they were missing a safety. Also. They were missing the starting safety, and they were missing a corner.
That's what they were missing. Yeah,
they were missing a safety and a corner. But even with that, though, it didn't look like that was the only difference of the game. Everybody's banged up at this time of year.
Well, listen, no excuses, Darren. You're in super wild card weekend over here. No excuses. I mean, not at this time of the year, anyway. So.
And my other post that I had on Facebook was the pretenders, the last of the great pretenders, Miami and Dallas. Miami was one of them. Their best win was Dallas. Okay? Yeah. I mean, outside of that, who'd they beat? They got swept by Buffalo. What, you beat the Jets and the Giants and the Patriots and you want a freaking medal?
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, you won five games that way. And Washington, six games that way. I mean, that's six of your 11 wins. Sorry. You didn't beat anybody good except Dallas, who showed what they are when we get to them next, G. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. And so Kansas City gets the win. They're the three seed. So they're going to go to the two seed, which is Buffalo. We'll come to them in a couple of minutes. First game on Sunday, Green Bay just annihilates Dallas 48-32. It was a rout. Green Bay was up 27-0 at one point. And it wasn't until Dallas scored with 2 seconds left in the first half that they actually put points on the board. It wound up looking a lot closer than it was because Dallas put 16 points up in the last quarter, which at that point, the game was for the most part over. Green Bay was led by Jordan Love, 272-3. There's your matching stat, Kev.
That's 16 for 21, both of them.
I know.
274 to 272.
Exactly. Three touchdowns each.
Yeah.
Aaron Jones had 21 carries for 118 yards and three touchdowns. Another big play. Darnell Savage had a 64-yard interception for a touchdown off of Dak Prescott. Kev, why don't you start us off with Dallas?
All right. First, it's nice to see the Jet quarterback in 2038 looking good. As a Jet fan, I'm jealous. I mean, they go from Favre to Rodgers, and now Love looks like – I'm not going to put him in the Hall of Fame like the other two yet, but, boy, he looks like he came on. You can see the weekly progression every week. He looks like a starter in the NFL, which is more than the Jets can say. But besides that, Green Bay taking the opening kickoff, saying, nope, we're going to get the ball first. So many teams defer. They said, no, we're getting the ball first. They go out and shove it down the Cowboys' throat. They go 75 yards, 12 plays in almost 8 minutes. Beautiful drive.
Yeah, it was.
And then they just kept piling on. They got up 20-0. And to me, the key point in the game, Dallas was finally starting to put together a little bit of a drive. It was 20-0. You're getting close to halftime and you're thinking, okay, you get the touchdown here. Dallas gets the ball started the second half. Maybe they can get that 2-for-1. And what happens? Dak throws a pick six, 27-0. Yes, Dallas did score right at halftime to get their touchdown up on board. They come out, though, then only score the field goal, 27-10. I think they scored the field goal.
Yep.
And, yeah. And, you know, from that point on, it was like, yep, that was it. They never stopped Green Bay. It was 41-16 early in the fourth quarter, or 48-16, actually.
Yep.
And just blowout city. Like Kyle, I mean, a little bit of a rub there with the San Fran-Dallas rivalry, but Kyle Shanahan, yeah, I got a jump on that. I started preparing for Green Bay in the second quarter.
Yeah, and with good reason. I had the same stuff as you about winning the toss. I mean, the announcers brought it up. They talked about it pretty heavy about Green Bay not deferring, and they were right on. I think was that Romo? I don't remember who the announcer was in that game. It wasn't Romo? It was Greg Olsen?
Olsen
was doing that game, and he brought that up right away. I thought it was really good. The first drive to go down the field, they didn't have a third. They didn't have a third down until they got the third and goal. And then they got the offside, they got to the 3-yard line, and they ran it down their throat on third down. Aaron Jones looked amazing in this game. He hadn't looked good all season, really. He was early on, then he was banged up. He had a good week one, and that was it. And all of a sudden, Dallas had no answer. Dallas was dominated on the Green Bay offensive line dominated Dallas. And Dallas's offensive line was not anything special, to be perfectly honest. They were okay, but nothing great. Dak put up gaudy numbers, 2 for 400 yards, but it was all garbage yards in the fourth quarter, basically. The Packer receivers seemed like they were open all day against these, you know, cornerbacks that are supposed to be so good with Gilmore and Bland, and they weren't. They just weren't good at all. They played a zone. They were a man team. They played a zone. They couldn't cover. They couldn't get pressure. Parsons wasn't a factor. You know, as much as it's an indictment on Dak and everybody's going to pick on Dak, the defense – what really showed me that they had nothing in this game. And the fact that Dan Quinn's getting an interview for all these jobs, even though I think they announced today that McCarthy's coming back.
They did announce it. Jerry Jones had actually announced it today.
But Dan Quinn getting these interviews, I don't know what everybody was watching. I mean, I know it's one game, but this is the biggest game of the year, and you didn't show up, and you made no adjustments. They were awful.
What was one of his last head games as a coach?
Yeah, he blew the Patriots Super Bowl. You know, He had no clock management skills and blew a game that they had no right to lose.
Yep.
And someone's going to hire him.
Okay. So Green Bay is the seventh seed. They will move on to play San Francisco this week.
First seventh seed ever to advance. Not that it's been around that long, but no seventh seed had won before.
Second game on Sunday was the best game of the six. Detroit knocks off the Rams 24-23. Jared Goff led the Lions to their first playoff win in 32 years. He threw for 277 and won. We should have bet everybody to throw for at least 270 yards, Kevin. That seemed to be the number, by the way, for the week. Yes. Both Montgomery and Gibbs both had running touchdowns. For the Rams, Stafford threw for 367 and two. Puka Nacua, 9 for 181 yards and one. He seemed to be open everywhere. And every time, everywhere he looked, he seemed to be open, running around somewhere. Detroit advances. Narrow, very good close game. Narrow finish. Detroit winds up advancing. Darren, you want to start this one?
Yeah, I mean, this was a game of two halves. The first half, the offenses dominated. They were going up and down the field. Rams had to settle for a field goal here and there, but instead of all touchdowns. But it was really an offensive first half. The second half was all defense in a lot of ways. Rams actually outgained the Lions by almost 100 yards in this game. Stafford played really well. Nacua was great, like you said. I was a little disappointed in the fact that they didn't run Kyren Williams as much. I know he got banged up a couple of times, but I thought they were relied on the pass a little too much, and they did not really get Cup involved as much as they should have, in my opinion. On Detroit's side, I felt the same way about Gibbs. I know they targeted Cup 9 times. He only had 5 catches. They got to find a way to get some screens, get him the ball more, because he makes things happen. You know, I thought that Gibbs didn't get enough carries. He only had 8 carries in the game. I thought that I was surprised that Montgomery almost doubled him in carries in this game. I thought it would be a little bit more balanced. I get why, and he's a big, strong running back. I get it. But Gibbs is such an electric player that can turn a game around on one play that you just want to get the ball in his hands. The worst clock management of the weekend was at the end of the game. It didn't end up costing them because they didn't get the ball back. But McVay's got to call a timeout on the other side of that 2-minute warning.
Yeah.
You got to make a decision. Either you're going to run it and punt to me at 120, or you're going to pass on a first down and risk an incompletion at 155. One or the other has to happen. The way he played it, they had no chance of getting the ball back with more than like 10 seconds left. I don't know what he was thinking. And Campbell, true to himself, passed multiple times, got the first down, didn't even leave it up to that. But McVay, who's been in this league long enough, has got to know a lot better than that. You know, also, the Rams, 3 field goals under 30 yards. That's how close they were getting in. And you can't have 3 field goals under 30 yards and win this type of game. 24-23, great game. Higbee at the end got hit low. Remember, they showed the replay on the Torres ACL. Don't know if he'll be ready for the start of next year. But that was a real – that's a hit that's a more egregious hit than some of the other ones we see when you go low like that and you see his whole leg buckle like that. That was nasty. And listen, it was the game of the weekend. The offenses are fun to watch. The crowd atmosphere was great. The Rams were good. The Lions were good. Nobody gave the game away. I was pretty pumped about it. Kev?
Great game to watch. Fast flowing. Mm-hmm. Did you realize each team only had the ball 8 times?
Yeah.
And one of them was the kneel down by the Rams at the end of the first half, mm-hmm. and the last drive by the Lions. So really 7 scoring drives for each team. That's all they had. Like I said, Darren, the red zone, Rams got in there 3 times, 3 field goals. Detroit got in there 3 times, 3 touchdowns. There's 12 That's points difference. There. There's a difference in the game.
You got it, Kev.
You know, Lions came out the first 2 drives. They had touchdowns, 14-3. The Rams could never get the lead. And, you know, 2 chances when they were down 24-17. They had to kick a 27-yarder and 29-yarder for 6 points, cut it to 1. Boy, if you're a Rams fan, you're just saying, what if we get been able to convert one of those third downs, get us closer, get us into the end zone, punch one in, you win the game.
That's where I thought the mistake was, is that not getting Williams involved, even in the pass game a little bit, or not just trying to throw screens in the cool or Cup at that point, but trying to throw it into the end zone where the defense got to really key on it because there's not that much space to work with. Even using Higbee at that time before he got hurt, I didn't like the play calling in the red zone, not because they didn't execute it, but because I thought every pass was like a fade or something that you're trying to make some sort of magical play on. Where, you know what? Sometimes, okay, we're at the eight. Let's get down to the four.
Yeah.
You know, let's get down to the three. And now defenses have to respect us. And then you go empty set. Everybody knows you're passing. I hate that. It's just, you know, give the illusion that you might run the ball every now and again.
Yep. And then the Higbee hit, you know, one of those unfortunate things. You know, the defender said no. Defender apologized profusely. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't trying to do it. And like the defender said, in some ways, you can't go high. Then they call a penalty.
That's it.
Now you go low, and you go too low, and you take out the guy's knee. And receivers would rather you go high.
No, you're right. The other guy that I thought had a great game in this one was Josh Reynolds. I know his stats aren't going to look gaudy at the end. He's the number three receiver, and he seemed like early on he was the guy that would go into a lot. I know St. Brown ends up as the top receiver in the game for them, but I thought that with LaPorta a little bit banged up, I thought that Reynolds really had a great, particularly first half. I thought he was all over the field. Probably the best game he played all year, in my opinion.
Five for 80 for a guy you don't expect.
For like a third or fourth receiver.
Yeah.
And LaPorta out there in that offense, even limited the way he was, still is integral because it opens some stuff up for some of these wide receivers. So, you know, it was good to see him actually out there. For me, it was a shame Detroit actually didn't cover, but we'll get to that another time. Okay, and then so Detroit with the win, they're going to host another game. They're going to host Tampa Bay. We'll talk about them in a minute. Detroit, a second home playoff game. Should be interesting. The crowd was pretty intense on Sunday night. So, all right, and then we get to Monday. Rescheduled game from Sunday to Monday because of the 48,000 inches of snow that they had in Buffalo. People being led into the stadium without even a seat. Just sit wherever you want as long as you can clean the snow off your chair. Buffalo winds up winning 31-17 against Pittsburgh. Josh Allen threw for three TDs, no interceptions. He ran a 52-yarder in, put the Bills out to a big lead. They were up 21-0, 21-7 at the half. Traded field goals in the third. Then in the fourth, Pittsburgh cut it down to 24-17. Before a touchdown by Buffalo to kind of put it away. Mason Rudolph had an interception. They also had a fumble. They lost the turnover battle 2-0. Buffalo advances 31-17. Kev, why don't you start this one off?
Yeah, Pittsburgh gets the ball first, punts. Buffalo responds, touchdown drive, 7-0. Then you had the pass completion. It was overturned, you know, on the field. They ruled it incomplete first. Pickens, the catch and the fumble. Next play, Buffalo, 14-0. Eventually, Pittsburgh finally got the drive going, you know, started looking good, and then Pickens threw the pick in the end zone. The ensuing drive was the Allen 52-yard touchdown run. And that's one, boy, if you're a defender and you see, if you look at the replays, you know, they started showing a little bit. Allen does a good job. You know, He breaks through the first line of scrimmage. He's getting into the heart of the secondary of the defense. He slows down for a second, like he might slide, and then he speeds up. And if you remember one of the previous drives, Pittsburgh, Allen had that late slide, and Pittsburgh came in with, rightfully so, according to the rules, it was a late hit on the quarterback on the slide.
It was actually after. It wasn't before. It was after.
Oh, was it after? I thought it was before.
It was. Jack got him later in the game. I wasn't watching at the point when they scored the first touchdown. So I didn't see it until they got later. But then they caught him for hitting him after he had faked him out the first time.
Okay, that was okay. I thought it was before that. My mistake there.
No big deal. I'm just saying.
But, you know, when you're defense there, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But anyway, I mean, like I said, great.
No.
Besides the point, it was still great. It's still, I'm not taking anything away from Allen's run. It was a great run by him.
But much to your point, you know, the NFL may need to look at that because you can't have these quarterbacks faking that they're going to slide and these guys are pulling back to not get the penalty and then they don't slide and the defenders are helpless. They're trying to, you know, catch up to the quarterback at that point. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
And then the one time that McDermott screwed up all game, you know, you're up 21-0. You're getting close to halftime. And you're sitting there 4th-and-7 at the 31 into the wind, and you're going to try a 50-yard field goal. blocked. I mean, great job by Pittsburgh blocking it. Huge Cameron all the way back. Pittsburgh recovers is at the 33. Five plays later, you've got the touchdown pass to Johnson. Also, it's 21-7. And you're thinking, you know, there's a little momentum swing. Buffalo did a good job of coming out second half and just making sure that nothing ever happened. So,
yeah. The closest they got it to was 24-17. So
they got it to one, but they never had the ball down one.
No,
they got it 24-17, and then Buffalo with that beautiful response to come back to 31-17, game over.
Yep. Darren?
Well, I mean, for me, a big play in this game was it was 14-0, and Pittsburgh's moving. They get inside the 10, and they throw that pick in the end zone. To Elam, who had been picked on the whole drive, and basically, you know, I hate that pass. I mean, that comeback pass where you're just blindly throwing it. I didn't like it, but it got picked off. Elam held on to it, and it stemmed the tide for another drive or two until Pittsburgh got the blocked field goal. But that was really a rough way to go. I thought Rudolph played pretty well. You know, they fell behind early. They didn't get to run much. So once Pittsburgh's out of that game where they can't run the ball as much as they want to, they're not going to do anything. They turned it over the two times. There was a couple of pass interferences that weren't called where I thought Pickens got mugged a little bit. They threw a snowball at him in the end zone trying to catch a pass. A couple of things that, but you know what? They would miss pass interference, I thought, in almost every game that we watched. So you really can't pin it on that. Buffalo's the better team. Allen didn't make any mistakes. And when Allen doesn't make any mistakes, that's going to be a tough team to beat.
Yep. All right. And then we go to the second game on Monday. Tampa Bay just utterly destroyed Philadelphia 32-9. Baker Mayfield throws for 337 and 3. He leads the Bucs to the rout of the Eagles. Eagles completely in disarray. Ended the season on a 6-game losing streak. They're the team that look like they had basically just quit before their first drive of the game. Darren, why don't you take it away?
This game should have been a bigger blowout as well. I mean, let's be honest. They settled for three field goals and busted in the first half. What was that?
No, good. Sorry.
Okay. No, I mean, they settled for three field goals in the first half. Philly basically quit down the stretch of the season, and this game was no exception. Stopped the tush push, which was pretty impressive. I know we got the face mask a little bit, but you know what? With everything, how hard it's to stop that. They got lower than Kelsey, which was freaking hysterical, who retired right after the game, by the way. Philly, I should say, 0-9 on third, 0-2 on fourth down. You're not going to win any games when you don't convert a third down the entire game. They made Baker look great. They didn't cover Otten all night. Otten was open every time they needed him to. The two touchdowns by Palmer and Moore, it was almost like they were untouched. Like Philly didn't even try to make a play on them. It was rough. And even with that, it was 16-9. It took that bad safety by Hurts where he ran back into the end zone to make it an 18-9 game. And, you know, and that was that. Smith was probably the only bright spot in the whole game for Philly. Defense was horrendous. The offense wasn't much better. And Tampa Bay was the much better team. They dominated from beginning to end, in my opinion, Kev.
Yeah, Philly only had about 5 or 6 carries the first half. Only 42 yards rushing the whole game. Back in week 3 when Philly beat them and when Philly was playing well, they had 200 yards rushing. So that was a huge turnaround there. Like you said, boy, it felt like Tampa Bay was letting Philly hang in there. And if this was a different Philly, if you hadn't been watching Philly the last 5 or 6 weeks where they'd given up, it felt like down the stretch, you keep a team like Philly in there this long, you think they're going to pay for it. And Philly just showed no interest in making Tampa sorry for keeping them in the game. And then, like you said, the terrible intentional grounding safety by Hurts.
Yep.
That really just turned the game for Tampa. The comeback with the touchdown, the next drive, and ball game was over at that point.
Yeah.
Agreed. Is Sirianni gone, guys, or you think he gets a chance?
I think he gets another chance.
I think they hard to fire a guy after 1 year after the Super Bowl, isn't it?
They did it to Peterson.
Yeah.
Change offensive coordinator, change defensive coordinator, but I think Sirianni winds up staying.
I just think that his team quit on him, which is an indictment.
Now, what do you think? At the point, they were down 25-9, so 16. So you're still looking at two touchdowns, two-point conversions. They get the field goal good with about, 10, 12 minutes left in the game. And Tampa Bay was offsides. And Sirianni took the points off the scoreboard, took the penalty, made it 4th and 5, and then the incomplete pass. Do you take the points off, or do you cut it to 13 and know that two touchdowns wins the game for you rather than two and two-point conversions to tie it?
I hardly ever take points off the board. I understood the extra point because it's so hard to stop them on the 1 yard, and they did stop them. So I understood why they would do it.
Yes.
As a Jet fan, I would never do it. Just keep the point. Even if I move up to the 1, I wouldn't do it.
But what about the field goal?
And the field goal, I wouldn't be taking the points off the board. If it was 4th and 1, maybe. 4th and 5, I wouldn't have done it.
Yep.
So normally I always subscribe to this theory. Do not take the points off the board. I think they really needed a touchdown. I think a touchdown really gives you a little momentum. So I didn't overthink them taking the points off the board, but on a normal basis, I'm right on board with you guys. I don't take points off the board. unless there's some exigent circumstances, you give me the ball at the 1 yard, something, that's the only way I'm taking the points off the board. Their playoff game, knowing your team, not really showing great stuff, need the touchdown there. I can live with it. I don't not necessarily agree with it though, Kev.
Yep.
All right. So we have two games Saturday, two games Sunday. Houston at Baltimore. Baltimore, 9.5-point favorite at the moment. Green Bay at San Francisco, 9.5-point favorite at the moment. The Sunday games, Tampa at Detroit, 6.5-point favorite. Kansas City at Buffalo. Buffalo, 2.5-point favorite at the moment. That's how the lines look. Should we get into the picks now, or do you want to do them at the end, Darren?
We always do them at the end. Let's stick with it.
All right. We'll do them at the end. NFL news. Again, the biggest thing happened a day and a half after we were off the air, which is Belichick resigned in New England. Looks like they're going to hire Jared Mayo as the coach. A lot of big-name coaches are out there right now. It's a bit intense. Any comments on that stuff, guys? Kev?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with that is Mayo was able, apparently because of some clause, but the Rooney Rule, he was able to get the job without having to interview everybody. I thought that was interesting. The Atlanta Falcons are the most interesting team. They've interviewed Belichick and Harbaugh so far. So they're trying. And listen, if you're a potential coach and you look at Atlanta with a solid offensive line, with everything but the quarterback, let's be honest, but you've got a tight end that's strong, you got a running back that's dynamic, another running back that's good, a number one wide receiver, a pretty solid defense. There's a lot of things to like if you can get the quarterback in Atlanta. So I understand why they would do what they would, why someone would be interested in that job. That team talent-wise should be the best team in the NFC South. They just had Arthur Smith running the show.
Exactly what you said, a weak NFC South.
It's very weak. You can win this division easy. I mean, you know, Todd Bowles doesn't scare you, even though every Jet fan's coming out of the woodwork. Oh, we should have kept Bowles. Really?
Oh, please.
Wow. We should have kept Flacco. We should have kept Bowles. Everybody I've been hearing about the last couple of weeks, I'm like, did you watch them when they played here or coached here? But anyway, beside that point, you know, Harbaugh being out there, Carroll still keeping his name out there, Belichick being out there, there's a lot of big-time names, and there's a lot of job opening. So we're going to be interested to see what happens. McCarthy's staying. Otherwise, he would have gotten a job right away. You know, it just seems that most of the coaches that have been making the playoffs lately are offensive-minded coaches. So I guess it's a little nerve-wracking to shy away from a defensive-minded coach. The Jets, of course, in their wisdom, have decided that Saleh's the guy. You know, I'm not saying he is or he isn't. Listen, but my only feeling about Saleh when I talk to any Jet fan, yeah, I really like Saleh. He's a really nice guy. I mean, nobody ever thinks he's a great coach. I mean, it's just one of those things. I wish he was our defensive coordinator. So do you, Kev. We all do. It just is what it is.
Unlike Gase, unlike Bowles, who we couldn't wait to get rid of.
We like him.
We like Saleh.
We haven't liked the coach since Rex.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's so many things to go to review. I think New Orleans fired their offensive coordinator this week, so they're going to try to make some changes. Pierce still doesn't have the job out in Raider land, and there's a bunch of rumors of different people getting interviewed out there. A lot of stuff happening, guys. A lot of stuff in the coaching ranks.
You know, the players really want Pierce.
They do. Max Crosby wanted to trade if he doesn't get Pierce.
And 2 years ago when they fired I forget who they fired, but they
Is it the special teams guy that came in?
Playing for him, and they said, "Nah, we're gonna bring in Josh McDaniels because he's so good." A year and a half later, they fire him, bring in Pierce or elevate Pierce. I think the players might win out this time.
I hope they do because Pierce is the kind of guy you want to see. Yep. Once again, Mike McDaniel, team not motivated.
McDaniel didn't look like he wanted to be there.
Enough of this nerdy crap on the sideline. Let's get men out there playing in snow and wet and wind and cold. I'm supposed to be crying in that, but not the head coach of a football team.
I mean, McDaniel with everything up to his face, covering his mouth.
Reed with icicles hanging from his beard.
And Reed just like, yeah, oh, I've got snot frozen in my mustache. Oh, well, who cares?
Don't see it. He was an offensive lineman. Men.
And just the amazing thing, you know, with Mayo taking over, part of me says I'm happy with that because I feel like Patriots really need a shakeup. After 20-something years of Belichick, I thought they needed to go outside the organization and shake things up a bit. Everything you read in the Mayo sounds like Bill Jr.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be the same thing.
And, Kev, plenty of coaches out there for them to shake it up with, too.
Yeah, I know. But for the first time since 2017, Sean McVay is not the youngest NFL coach. Jared Mayo is a month younger than McVay. And McVay's been around for 7-8 years already. Jeez.
He has. He certainly has.
Yeah.
All right. Over the next couple of weeks, as we're going through the other playoff games, we're going to get more and more into the coaches. And then we'll start looking at free agencies, big free agents and free agents of our favorite teams.
Okay.
I mean, it's Jets and Washington. And the Giants will come.
All my Washington team gets the coach first.
You will. You'll have your options.
Yeah, they're saying that Johnson is in line for that job right now, so we'll see what happens. All right, we'll go around the sports world. Baseball, start with baseball. Yankees signed Marcus Stroman, 2 years, $37 million. They also signed Luke Weaver, by the way, Darren. Do you like Luke Weaver?
No.
1 year, $2 million with a $2.5 million player option with bonuses, could get to 8.5 over two. We'll see what happens with that. And the other signing, I don't see
those bonuses working out.
The other signing was Jordan Hicks, who signed with the Giants, 4 years, $44 million. The big surprise with that is San Francisco says they want to use him as a starter. So.
Try to get 5 innings out of him?
I know. Any other baseball info, guys?
Mets today announced this year they are retiring Doc and Darryl's numbers. Doc's number on April 14th, Darryl's on June 1st. So 16 and 18 joins the illustrious list of Met jerseys.
The Yankees are going to retire him on April 12th and May
31st. and just a shout out, Bud Harrelson.
He passed away.
Passing away. Scrappy, you know, star of the 73 World Series, fighting Pete Rose there in the NLCS. Of course, Darren, you probably are big on him being the Long Island Ducks.
Absolutely.
That's a big thing out of Long Island. So,
yeah, I met the new manager tonight, Lou Ford, by the way, former Minnesota Twin.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember
the new manager of the Ducks. I was at an event tonight called Corey's Promise. I just want to touch on this real quick for a second. Corey Phelan was a minor league baseball player that died of leukemia. He was in the Philly organization. He was died in 22. I think he was 19 years old. Kid named Logan O'Hoppe, who's the catcher for the Anaheim Angels, got hurt. Good pop in his bat. He was best friend. And O'Hoppe was at this event tonight. I got to meet him. And they're raising money for leukemia. It was really, really cool. Really, really nice kid. Again, it's called Corey's Promise. You know, I asked O'Hoppe just real quick. I was like, so what's it like being the teammate of Trout and Otani, and he was like, it's everything you can imagine. He kept calling me sir, made me feel like I was 106, 23 years old. But, you know, the kid was so so polite and everything like that. He goes, it's everything you can imagine. Just learning so much from watching those guys. It was a really cool event. But, you know, just nice to see some money being raised for leukemia and getting a chance to meet Logan O'Hoppe. So, you know, hopefully cool. we'll have an opportunity to get him on the program one day. We'll talk about the Corey's promise. And I met the Phelan family. They're like, you know how to spell our last name? I'm like, well, Gerard Phelan made the big catch. So I got this down because the kid's last name is Phelan. Yeah, Phelan, Gerard Phelan, BC versus Miami. So that was my little baseball thing. The other thing was international signing period came out. Mets got a couple of players. Yankees got somebody. Padres actually made a pretty big splash with the guy they got. So you never know about the international players. Usually takes 3, 4, 5. Sometimes they sign them when they're 15. Sometimes you're waiting 5, 6 years. Sometimes you're waiting one. But it's always fun.
And one of the Mets signings, Vladdy Guerrero.
Yep, they signed Guerrero's littlest boy.
The half-brother of Vlad Jr.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's always an interesting time because some of these kids are just amazing, but you wait so long. So we'll see what happens with those guys. But, again, just wanted to touch on the event I was at tonight.
Very cool. That's some good. Doing some good for the community. I like that. All right, we'll move over. NBA, Kev, there was an NBA trade today.
Yeah. The three-teamer, even though the third team was more, I don't know, they got involved just for luxury tax purposes.
I love Pelican, NBA trades.
The big name, Pascal Siakam goes from the Raptors to the Pacers in exchange for Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and Kyra Lewis. Lewis was originally from the Pelicans, and then three ones. Pacers get a future second from the Pelicans. Pelicans gave up a future second, and Lewis, in exchange for nothing, they just trying to get under a luxury tax. but like I said, Raptors getting 3 ones for Siakam after making the trade, trading OG for Barrett and Quickly. Darren, any thoughts?
Indiana's all in. Siakam's averaging 22 points a game. They put him with Halliburton. They're going to have Indiana's making a run for it. I mean, listen, it's going to be tough to overtake Boston. It's going to be tough to overtake Milwaukee. Right now, they're pretty basically tied with the Knicks for where they are right now.
Yeah.
Philly, you don't know if how long that they hang around. So Cleveland's playing well. They've won, I think, 5 in a row or 6 in a row, something like that. But you put these teams together, and Indiana's like, why not? Let's make a run. Let's see if we can do something. You know, I thought it was a good trade for Indiana. I mean, I know, and I think it's a good trade for Toronto, getting the capital of the three number ones. If they start playing better than expected, they can deal those number ones and get another player. If not, they can just build through the draft. But I like the move for both teams.
Two other things. One tragedy that happened, Golden State. They were at a team dinner last night. Their assistant coach, 46-year-old.
Dejan Milojevic. I'm just trying to help you, Kev.
Thank you. Much appreciated. Apparently suffered a heart attack during the dinner, passed away today. The team had – you knew it was serious when they were postponing tonight's game, even before any announcement or anything. 46, just way too young. That's younger than all three of us.
Yep.
So that really is just a shame. You mentioned the Knicks, 6-2 since the trade. They lost their last one without Brunson. They lost to Orlando, you know, team that they're battling with in that 5-4-5-6 area. They're just not the same without Brunson in the backcourt there.
No.
And the funny thing is McBride's playing well.
He is.
Just he's a spurt player, though. You can't count on him to do it the entire game. The Knicks, you know, like you said, they blew that game to the Magic. They had the lead most of the way.
Yep.
But that's what the NBA is. You come back in the fourth quarter, make a couple threes, inbound it in the front court, you know, all the fun stuff that makes the game, you know, easier to come back in than in other sports. But, yeah, you know, the Knicks need Brunson. Best player on the court every time he's out there for them.
Okay. Sticking with basketball, let's move to a little college basketball, Darren.
I'm not going to get too deep into it yet because it's early, right? But we'll start digging into the conferences deeper real soon. But this season has been unbelievably exciting already so far. Really cool. Big 12, best conference in the country. Every team except West Virginia and Oklahoma State is a team that could make the tournament. The 12 seed in that division, UCF, beat Kansas already, and they're 10-5. So this team could do anything. Last night, Baylor, who's an unbelievable team, loses at K-State. TCU beats Houston, then loses in overtime at Cincinnati last night. Iowa State, nobody wants to ever go play at Hilton Coliseum. This conference is ridiculous. Oklahoma is great. Texas is solid. BYU is really good. That's the league to watch. Big East has the resurgence from St. John's and Villanova, which is really nice to see. Connecticut's been great. They blew out Creighton tonight, who had been pretty good. The team that's sleeping on everybody's Seton Hall has been on fire lately. Blew out the Johnnies by 20. Patino had COVID. Didn't get the coach last night, but he wasn't worth 20 points. Seton Hall just played really, really well. The ACC, the two blue bloods are back on top. Carolina and Duke are the two best teams in this league right now. But NC State playing well. Wake's playing pretty well. And Florida State's resurging a little bit. SEC, the Big Four, the Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, and Kentucky looks like the best one of them all leading the way. It's a good league, Kev. It's going to be, you're going to get 7, 8, maybe 9 teams out of this league. And your South Carolina team's going to be battling with a bunch of other ones to get in that spot. Team like Georgia is right there. Team like Mississippi State is right there. Team like Ole Miss is right there. Team like LSU is right there. I mean, there's so many decent teams. Florida could play themselves in there if they get some home games and a couple wins. Arkansas has been off. Missouri's been off. So a couple teams are a little bit off that you would expect to be good. But there's a lot of really good teams there. Pac-12's horrible. But Oregon's been pretty good. Arizona's been excellent. Utah's been pretty good. Nobody else you'd really even consider to be a tournament team in this league. UCLA and USC have been god-awful. Big Ten. Purdue's the best team in the league. Wisconsin might be the best record-wise right now, but they lost to Penn State last night. They'll fall back. Illinois is really good as well. Nebraska was playing great, but they got picked off by Rutgers tonight. Northwestern has been excellent. Those are the teams I'd look at right now as the best. Mountain West has 6 big-time teams going right now. Really fun league to watch. Every night, something new going on. Boise State being the 6th because their record's only 12-5, but they're playing really well in the conference. But New Mexico is good. Utah State's been excellent. Nevada's been excellent. I mean, San Diego State was in the championship game last year. I mean, there's a lot of things to like. Colorado State being the other team. Missouri Valley, Indiana State, and Drake are both excellent. Both Drake winning big tonight. Grand Canyon, 16-1. Only loss they have, Kev's South Carolina team. Coached by our friend, Bryce Drew. Absolutely. We all remember him from Valpo days. They also beat San Diego State. So this is not a team that has 16 crap wins. They beat the team that played in the championship game last year. And the loss of South Carolina was only by 7. So they're real good. And my last point, 2 points. Number one, Rick Pitino had a quote saying, I'm in this for the championship. If we don't get to a championship here at St. John's, I'm going to retire and jump into the East River. So, I mean, he's all in. And the other last thing is Gonzaga. First time in 143 weeks of the poll not being ranked. They should have been out 2 weeks ago, but they kept them on because of name recognition. A lot to talk about. College hoops is crazy. TCU on the women's side has to forfeit the next 2 games because they have too many players with COVID. Outside of that, anything you want to add, Kev?
I was going to say, Bracketology, Lunardi on ESPN has Gonzaga first team out. And he brought up a point. If Princeton – they'd be favored in the rest of their Ivy League games.
Yes, they would.
They've got one loss. Their net rating right now is in the 30s. If they go all the way through and lose in a championship game close, and they're going in with a 2-loss team, any chance? I mean, of course, it depends on what happens in these other conferences, but maybe one time that, a 2-loss team is so hard to keep out of. Especially
well, listen, same thing with the Antelopes. Okay. Same thing with Grand Canyon. I can't see them getting knocked out with 2 losses. I can't see Princeton getting knocked out with 2 losses. Princeton has a couple good wins, including Rutgers. So they beat a Big Ten team on the road. It's not like they didn't beat anybody good. They've won a couple. So, you got to count that in there as well. And one last thing in a mid-major, just because I think it's fun. Samford, Western Carolina last night. Now, you may not be familiar with Samford, in the Southern Conference, but the Bulldogs average 91 points a game. They're like watching Paul Westhead's LMU teams back in the day. Western Carolina, more of a defensive type of team. Both teams went in, they're the Catamounts. Both teams went into it 15-2 last night in Kolohe, North Carolina, home of the Western Carolina Catamounts. Samford ended up on top 75-71, so they kind of split the difference on where they were, offense and defense. But these are two squads to really watch. 16-2, 15-3. And this league also has Wofford and UNC Greensboro in it. So there's four really good teams in this league. But these are two teams that you're going to like watching. If you get a chance to watch a Samford game, it's hysterical to watch them. They just push. It is kind of fun to watch. They averaged 91 points a game going into last night.
I mean, they've taken, you know, about 1,100 field goal attempts. Almost 500 have been threes.
Yeah, they just shoot.
They come down. They shoot threes left and right.
They just come down. This is literally white, like watching the Bo Kimble and Fryer and Peabody. I mean, and Hank Gathers, obviously, before he passed. And all those guys just chucking threes. Fast break threes. Fast break three. They just shoot and shoot and shoot. Samford is a real – I've watched them play twice. They're a fun team to watch. I mean, you know, listen, there's not a lot of defense on there, but they outscore you like crazy. They just let it fly.
They seem to rotate like 12 guys through. There's 12 guys almost averaging double digits in minutes. Mm-hmm. They just keep running through guys through and keep them fresh.
I didn't see the whole game last night. I saw little bits of it, but that's Western Carolina. I just think they tried to slow it down the best they can. They did a pretty good job. It was actually a really good game. But you feel like if it was at Samford, they would have won by double digits. And that's all I got for the college game there, G.
All right. And Rutgers, big overtime win today.
Yeah, exactly. Gets them back into it a little bit. But they have a long way to go to get into consideration. They're 11-7 going in, I think. They have a lot of bad losses. They're just a team nobody wants to play because they're so physical and nasty.
Thank God I can watch the Gamecocks, because my alma mater, the Jaspers, are just god awful.
They are in an awful league, but St. Peter's has actually gotten pretty hot in there. They won five, their first five in that league. So St. Peter's playing pretty well.
That Rutgers mention was for Doug, by the way.
Doug, thanks for listening.
Okay, over to the NHL. Any NHL points before we get to some picks? Darren?
Just two real quick things. Number one, Edmonton has won 11 in a row. And they've really only picked up 2 points because Vancouver's been that good. They've been 9-1-1 in their last 11. So they haven't picked up much. Winnipeg's been really good also. Rangers and Devils are scuffling, and the Islanders are slumping right now. The Islanders just don't look they have a lot going on. I think, hey, Paul, do we need a coaching change, Paul? Let us know. I think that the Islanders might need a new voice. They've been outscored by 20 goals this year already. 130 scored, 150 against. That's not a good that's not a good omen for them. And the Flames have won four in a row. Kev?
Yeah, you mentioned Winnipeg. 17-2-2 in their last 21.
That's playing great hockey.
I actually had a couple points on the Islanders here. You know,
go for it.
They were doing pretty well. Then they've lost five of their last six. They're 2-6-1 in their last nine. And you look, their goals against average is 23rd in the league. You know, you think, oh, yeah, you know, with Sorokin, you don't expect that. This is a defensive team. The save percentage is 7th in the league. So the goals are making the saves. They've given up the second most shots in the National Hockey League. Only San Jose has given up more. Just for comparison, the Rangers have played one fewer game. They've given up the 8 fewest. They've given up 300 less shots this year. That's about 7 or 8 shots a game less that the Rangers have given up. Where the hell is the defense for the Islanders?
Pelech's injury really hurt that team because he's the best guy.
But they've. This is
I'm
a
just
team
saying, it shouldn't be one guy, but this, the loss of Pelech will affect them dramatically. I agree.
And they've given up the second most shots. I mean, and with Sorokin having to play every day because Varlamov's injured, you got to wear down Sorokin. He's not going to have anything left. If there's any season to have at this point.
And it's a dogfight in the East. I mean, you can't afford to give away 2 points every single night. You can't. No. You just can't do it. You can't do it. I had one last hockey point. Terry Ryan, 47 years old. You know, first round pick in 1977 of the Montreal Canadiens. And one of the guys that's in the show, Shorzy, which I've told you guys about, the hockey show in Canada. Suit it up for the New Finland Growlers this week. 47 years old. Got into a fight in his first game defending a player. Crowd went nuts. Got a standing O after the game. Came back out. Crowd was going nuts. He plays Hitch on Shorzy. If you ever get a chance to watch it, it's an hysterical show. But you got to love a 47-year-old guy going back out there and scrapping some 22-year-old in his first game back. just one of his guys got hit hard. He just went right after him. It was, I mean, listen, they try to say that they want to take the fighting out of the sport and because of the American TV audience, I'm sorry. The fighting is the most honorable thing that goes on in this sport. You step out of line, they police themselves. Yep. That's what makes this sport excellent. I'm not trying to say that it should be a bloodbath every night and we should have line brawls all the time. I'm saying that there's a certain place for it in this sport. And the fact that they try to remove it for NBC or ABC or ESPN is a joke. One man's opinion.
Okay.
All right, G.
Anything else for NFL picks, guys? Anything else? All right.
That's all I had. We're going to start talking about Derby prep races in the next couple of weeks as we start getting into the grade threes real soon. Actually, next week.
The first game, by the way, last week, Kev was 3-3. Darren was 3-3. Gino was a miserable 0-6 against the spread last week. So we're going to try to make that a little bit better.
Darren and I had to have the same record. We had the same picks.
The same picks.
Hopefully, we'll have a little difference.
I'm going to make this announcement now. Gino, if we start with Kevin first game, I'll go second, you go third. Then the next game, I'll go first, you go second. Let's rotate.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
First game up is Houston at Baltimore. It's a Saturday 4:30 game. Baltimore, 9.5-point favorite, over under 43.5. Kev, you want to start with this one?
Yeah. You know, we saw what Houston did to Cleveland last week, putting up 45 on them. And yes, that includes two pick sixes. You know, still they scored 31 points on offense. Baltimore, second best defense in the league this year. Only Cleveland was better, and we just saw what Houston could do to them. Baltimore, I think, is a little bit more balanced this year on offense. Has always been their struggle coming into the playoffs. You know, Lamar Jackson, you know, always a little shaky. If he's been healthy coming into the playoffs and then playing, always a little questionable. But I think the big thing for Baltimore this year is they've got the weapon outside Zay Flowers. So that gives Baltimore a much more balanced attack. Both quarterbacks are playing so well. You know, Jackson is probably the MVP. Stroud's been playing lights out down the stretch here after coming back from the injury in the Jet game. I think this is a close game. I'm taking the Texans plus a 9.5. Baltimore does win, but the Texans do cover.
All right. To me, it's an intriguing game also. Houston likes to air it out. Baltimore likes to run it down your throat. Ravens have several injuries at running back, but they keep on going. They just find a way. Andrews, full participant in practice today. Looks like he's going to play, and likely he's been great for them. Defensively, Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen, great linebackers. Hamilton's been great at safety. You know, there's a lot of good things to like. If Houston can handle getting punched in the mouth early, they're in this game. They're going to get punched in the mouth early. Lamar has not been good in the playoffs. One win, one career playoff win. Kev was 7-7. I think Houston's going to win it. I got Houston winning 27-24. I got Houston advancing in this game. Jake?
Okay. I think Houston plays well. I think they keep the game close. In the end, I think Baltimore winds up winning this. I think they wind up winning this by 10. So I'm taking Baltimore minus the 9.5 points. Okay. I think it's close. I think it's close. It's a 7-point game. Baltimore gets a late field goal, late touchdown to secure it. 30-20 maybe. Baltimore 30-20. I'd like Baltimore minus the 9.5. Second game, Green Bay at San Francisco. San Francisco, 9.5-point favorite, over under a 50.5, 7-point differential from the first game. They obviously think a lot of points are going to go on the board. Darren, why don't you start this one?
All right. These two offenses should move the ball. I think San Francisco has a superior D-line to Dallas, so I think that gives them a little bit of an advantage except for Parsons. But the defensive line hasn't been great this year either, though. 49 linebackers are excellent. The secondary is pretty good. To me, the key to this game is McCaffrey. If they can get McCaffrey out in space, I don't think Green Bay is going to be able to slow them down or stop them. There's so many weapons, but I think that San Francisco is just better. I think San Francisco wins this game by 14 points. I think San Francisco covers the 9.5, and they move forward. G, who do you got?
I like San Francisco in this game. I think this is, of the four games, this is the potential for a blowout. I think Green Bay basically gave everything they had last week. I think something now comes back a little bit, so they're not going to play as well as they played last week. This week they're playing a completely different team, completely balanced team. On offense, they're going to put tons of points up on this board. San Francisco, I don't know, 31-14. I think it's a pretty big scoring game. And I'll give it to you. I think McCaffrey has a huge game in this game. So I take San Francisco minus the 9.5. Kev.
Love is playing better and better as we go through here. Green Bay is a very exciting young team to watch, but San Fran's just better. They've had the week off. And the one place Green Bay can struggle is against the run. And we know San Fran's got Christian McCaffrey. I mean, I think we've all got the same wavelength here. Unfortunately, Denver, we're now 8-for-8. I'm taking San Fran, you know, probably by about 17 points.
Yeah, gotcha. That's where I had it, 31-14. So
I had it 14. Yeah. You guys have it 17. Well, we're not that far apart.
Yep. All right.
So you kick us off with the next one, Jake.
Third game of the week is 3 o'clock start Sunday. Tampa at Detroit. Detroit, 6.5-point favorite. I think we got two pieces to this. One, I think Detroit is starting to build a little momentum here. I like the way they came out and played against the Rams. They gave the Rams everything they can handle. They wound up getting the win. On the other side of the ball, I think Tampa Bay got put in an easy position in the second half, took their foot off the gas a little bit. They blew the hell out of no one even thought Philadelphia was coming back in that game. And here's the thing we've been saying all year, guys. Are we seeing Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Baker Mayfield? Last week, we got the good Baker Mayfield. I have a feeling we're not getting the good Baker Mayfield this week. I like Detroit minus the 6.5. I think Detroit wins this game by 10.
Kev?
We saw Detroit beat Tampa earlier this year, 20-6 in October. But Tampa has been playing so well down the stretch here. They really had to put on a good run at the end to make the playoffs. Lions, very balanced line offense. They've got the two-headed running back. They've got the weapons out with St. Brown. You know, if Reynolds can contribute like he did last week, they've got Laporta. But I think Tampa really relies on the passing game. They don't run the ball, but I think Detroit's weakness can be on the passing defense. I think Tampa gives them a game. It's another game. I'm hedging my bet here. I think Detroit wins it, but I think Tampa gives them a battle. I'm taking Tampa plus the points.
Okay.
All right. Well, all right. Kev, you'll be relieved to know we finally disagree on one. The Bucs look great on Monday. Baker picked apart the Philly defense, and Detroit's defense isn't that much better. Bucs protected them well, too. That's going to be the key. The key is going to be if Aiden Hutchinson can make Baker uncomfortable. I think Detroit's D is better than Philly's D, and I think that Detroit has a ton of weapons, and I think Tampa keeps it competitive, but Detroit wins it by 8. 31-23 is my final in this one. So I have it going over as well.
All right, game 4, Sunday. Kansas City at Buffalo. Buffalo, 2.5-point favorite over under a 45. Darren, we're going to start it off with you.
Okay, but the Bills have won 5 in a row. Allen's played great last week. He struggled the week before, but they still find a way to win. Chiefs don't score touchdowns. Defense has been excellent, though. First ever road playoff game for Mahomes. He's never been on the road before, so we don't know how he reacts to this stuff. It's going to be cold. I don't think it affects anybody in this game. I honestly think that the Chiefs' advantages on defense are superior to the Bills' advantages on offense. I think the injuries to some of the key players on Buffalo, like White at corner and Rasul Douglas at corner and Milano in the middle, I think that hurts them. I think the only place where they're even close is on the D-line. I think that the Chiefs are superior at linebacker and then the secondary. I think offensively, the Bills are better at wide receiver and tight end than the Chiefs are. Hard to say that with Kelsey, but right now I think it's just that way. But I think that the Chiefs are as good as the Bills are on offensive line, and the quarterback is and the running backs are kind of a push to me. I think it's enough to give Kansas City a 23-20 win on the road. I think Kansas City moves forward.
Okay, Kev?
2.5, right?
2.5.
Yes.
Yeah, like I said, Mahomes' first playoff game on the road. Yeah, it's going to be cold in Buffalo, but it can't be colder than sub-zero in Kansas City. You feel like this is going to be the game of the weekend. It's a Sunday semi-primetime game. The emergence of Rasheed Rice gives Mahomes that other weapon, but Buffalo has played so well down the stretch here. I mean, a couple weeks ago, they were sitting in 10th in the AFC, and they moved all the way up to the second seed. I think this is the year Buffalo finally beats Kansas City, so they'll cover the 2.5.
All right.
So I'll take Buffalo.
All right. Preseason, my preseason Super Bowl pick was Buffalo and San Francisco. Can't go against it at this point. I like Buffalo in this game. Darren, I think I agree with everything you said, and in spite of that, I think Josh Allen winds up having a big game. I like the way their tight ends are playing right now. I don't think we're going to see a huge blowout in this game, but Buffalo minus the 2.5. It's only a field goal game. I think Buffalo wins maybe by 7. You know, cold weather, yeah, it'll be a problem, but Kansas City plays in cold weather anyway. I don't see that being a big issue. Buffalo, minus the 2.5, maybe 2017. Late field goal by Bass to win the game. Buffalo, my final pick for this weekend coming up.
My only point on this game is if it is a two-score game, I think Buffalo wins it. If it's a close game, I think Kansas City wins it. That's just the way I view it. I think Allen always plays great against Kansas City. Him and Burrow love to play against Mahomes. They take it personally. And I think that that's always pretty cool. And I think Mahomes' match is usually in kind. Jake?
Okay. 4 games this weekend. Which game do you think has the potential to be a blowout? Darren?
San Francisco.
Kev?
San Francisco.
Okay. And what of the 4 games, which game do you think is probably the closest one of the bunch?
Chiefs Bills.
Houston.
I think it's also Chiefs Bills, by the way.
I think they're both 2-3 point games. I think Houston's gonna win it. So that's the upset. That to me is my upset in this out of these 4 games.
And I agree with both.
I have Kansas City too. I don't consider that an upset though.
I think the biggest chance of a blowout is San Francisco Green Bay. I agree with the both of you. Okay, that's our picks.
Yeah, I think we're good. Is there anything else you guys want to cover before we move forward? All right, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kev, here with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. Talk about Terry Ryan getting into a fight at 47 years old in a Canadian Hockey League. We'll talk about anything you want. We talk about the Islanders firing coaches. We talk about two legends like Saban and Belichick being replaced within 48 hours of stepping down from their jobs. But really what we mostly talk about is sports. And what we'd like you to do is download our podcast. Anywhere you can get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, whatever you like. We share a lot of things on Facebook and on social media. Please like, share, tell us what you want to hear, comment, say whatever it is that you want to say, and let us know because we want to do this show for you guys. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.